Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit alz.org/timetotalk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
U.S. Senate candidate Eric Hovde suggested most nursing home residents shouldn't be allowed to vote because of their life expectancy.
Listen to Eric Hovde.
Well, if you're in a nursing home, you only have 5-6 month life expectancy. Almost nobody in a nursing home is in a point to vote.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Even though I'm old, I'm doing just fine, Eric Hovde.
Son, I've served this country. I think I can handle a ballot.
Listen to Eric Hovde again.
Almost nobody in a nursing home is in a point to vote.
What's he talking about?
Didn't he learn to respect his elders?
Eric Hovde hasn't just insulted older Wisconsinites. He's also proposed cutting Social Security, Medicare, and nursing home care, even veterans benefits.
He's crazy.
He's a jerk.
Eric Hovde, what's wrong with this guy?
I'm Tammy Baldwin, candidate for Senate, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Tammy Baldwin for Senate.
You're listening to WRDN, 1430 AM, Durand, Mondovi, Wabasha, and 107.3 FM at Translator W297CH, Durand.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. 45,000 union dock workers back on the job today at more than a dozen ports after a three-day strike. The union and U.S. Maritime Alliance coming to a tentative agreement on pay raises and will then table other issues until talks resume in January. President Biden making a surprise appearance at the White House briefing today, commending both sides.
We averted what could have become a major crisis for the country. And a tentative agreement, which includes record wage increases for dock workers and shows the importance of collective bargaining.
The president also touted September's jobs report. 254,000 jobs were added. That beat back expectations. Former President Trump campaigning in Georgia today, meeting with first responders following Hurricane Helene. That storm blamed for at least 215 deaths. Vice President Kamala Harris holding a rally in Michigan, and earlier we'll meet with Arab leaders in the swing state. This is ABC News. New York Congressman Mike Lawler apologizing for a photo appearing to show him in blackface.
The New York Times obtained the picture of the first-term Republican dressed as Michael Jackson at a college Halloween party in 2006. Mike Lawler admits he used bronzer on his face, telling CNN he's a Michael Jackson fan.
I think there is a stark difference between dressing up for Halloween and paying homage to somebody you like and respect versus dressing up in blackface to demean and dehumanize black people.
Lawler is in a tough race against Democratic former Congressman Mondaire Jones, who is black. Sherry Preston, ABC News, New York.
This year's flu vaccine significantly reduced the risk of hospitalization in the Southern Hemisphere. The CDC says, though, it wasn't as effective as the vaccine used in the prior season. Researchers say the vaccine reduced the risk of hospitalization from the flu by 35%. I'm Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Hi, welcome to Staples.
Hi, I hear Staples can print everything for my business.
Sure can.
And the quality is guaranteed?
Absolutely.
Plus, you'll beat any price quote. Is that right?
For sure.
How about this one?
We'll beat it.
Can you print menu signs and flyers?
Sure can.
How about blueprints?
No problem.
What about red prints?
Not a real thing.
What if they were?
We'd print them. And they'd look amazing.
Now at Staples, print more, save more. Up to $150 off your print purchase. Ends 11-2. Exclusions apply. Visit staples.com/print for offer details and staples.com/price match for in-store price match guarantee.
Mom, meet Sarah.
From first-time Nana moments.
Yeah, welcome to Flight 101.
To annual girls' trip moments. Your can't-miss moments are worth protecting against RSV. If you're 75 or older, or 60-plus with a chronic condition like asthma, COPD, heart disease, or diabetes, you're at higher risk of being hospitalized from RSV. And there are no prescription RSV treatments. Check eligibility and schedule your RSV vaccine at vaxassist.com.
So where should we go next?
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Wisconsin Radio Network News, I'm Ted Aylin. The latest Marquette Law School poll shows Governor Tony Evers' approval rating dropping for the first time in almost 2 years. Poll director Charles Franklin.
He's been over 50% all year, but he dipped under this time, though still more approved than disapproved by a point or two. This is the first time we've had him under 50 since during the 22 reelection campaign.
Poll also found 44% of respondents say the state is headed in the right direction, while 56% say it's on the wrong track. That was 46 to 53 last month. A former Waupun correctional officer pleads no contest in connection to the deaths of two inmates.
Sarah Ransbottom was initially charged with misconduct in public office, but pleaded no contest last week to a lesser charge of violating laws governing state institutions. A criminal complaint alleges Ransbottom signed on record that she had completed cell checks on February 21st. Security camera footage showed she hadn't. Inmate Donald Meyer was found dead the following day. Nine people, including Ransbottom and former Waupun warden Randall Hepp, are charged in connection to the deaths of Meyer and another inmate. Sean Maloney, Wisconsin Radio Network.
Attorney General Josh Call won't be able to use sealed documents from the Milwaukee Archdiocese bankruptcy case to investigate sex crimes.
The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports a federal judge ruled last month the AG's office will not be allowed access to records that were sealed a decade ago in the wide-ranging bankruptcy case involving settlements with victims of clergy abuse. Call argued the files would remain confidential and not be released to the public, and that the Archdiocese was failing to provide records in his investigation. Judge Michael Haffinger said the files were sealed to protect victims. Raymond Newpert, Wisconsin Radio Network.
You're listening to Wisconsin Radio Network News.
Rugged outside, comfort inside. Working outside all day, you want to be in control. And TYM Tractors puts you in control with the TYM Climate Control Cab. This cab is designed with your comfort in mind, with temperature controls, plenty of headroom, and noise reduction. Rugged comfort that makes tough jobs a little bit easier. Work smarter, not harder. But you can't buy a TYM tractor just anywhere. It's only sold at special authorized TYM dealers, like Synergy Cooperative, Highway 25 in Ridgeland.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. A ton of sunshine today with high temperatures flirting with 70 degrees. Winds get feisty out of the south tomorrow, shoving our highs to near 80 degrees. Got chances of showers and maybe a rumble of thunder at night. Then as the cold front passes, we drop cool. Highs on Sunday only reach the mid-60s. Grandpa's barbecue sauce. Get yours now at grandpasbbqshop.com. Currently, it's 65.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, this is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And thank you for joining us here for AOA, Agriculture of America Today, the show powered by our friends at Cenex. Great to have you along for the conversation. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Coming up here on the show, we're going to talk markets as we wrapped up the week of trade on Friday. We'll talk with David Brock for the Brock Report here in just a moment. In segment two, we'll have a look at news headlines, including the port strike on the East Coast and Gulf Coast ports, reaching a tentative agreement Thursday evening, ending that strike, it appears, and ending a lot of the concern for the overall ag economy, overall economy, supply chain, etc. We're going to get some updates on that story, and we'll have a report from one of our good friends, affiliate Brian Winnikins at WRDN in Durand, Wisconsin. He's been at World Dairy Expo this past week in Madison, Wisconsin. We'll have a conversation he had with Corey Geiger, lead dairy economist at CoBank. That's coming up in segment two. Then in the second half of the show today, we'll have another one of our open mic style conversations with Ryan Schaefer, Vice President of New Holland North America. We're going to talk about the ag economy, the ag equipment sector, and much more. That's all coming up here on today's program. Again, brought to you by Cenex. Their premium diesel can keep your operation moving. Trust your local experts. Go to Cenex.com or your nearest store for more. Let's talk markets and take a look at how the trade action is going as we close out the week and head to the weekend. Dave Brock with the Brock Report joins us here today on the show. And Dave, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Yeah, doing great, Jesse. Morning.
Well, as we look at this market, Friday's action feels kind of quiet and mixed. I know we have a dollar that's surging on some of the new jobs data that came out Friday morning. But, you know, I think just take a step back here. There's been a lot of news headlines and different factors, it feels like, kind of thrown at these markets here really the last week or so, and maybe some added farmers selling as we've had a little bit of a rally in some of these grain contracts, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, starting out of the big picture, I mean, we published on September 6th that we think the bottom's in these markets. And, you know, even that being said, though, I mean, right now you've got March corn 40 off its contract lows. You got beans still 90 cents off their contract lows, even after, you know, slight pullback in both those in the last couple of days. So, you know, even if you do think that the bottom is in these markets, I think farmers are in a situation now where those are sizable rallies that you at least need to start thinking about selling. We've still got a lot of harvest pressure ahead of us, and the fundamentals can, you know, change quickly in corn and beans. So, you know, it's been a great few weeks. It's been fun to watch prices go up. So I think all in all, everybody's in a much better mood now than last time we talked.
Yeah, I think the mood is a little better to at least get caught up on some sales, as some folks have maybe been just really far behind in this price environment. Looking ahead, I know we got a WASDE report coming up. We're watching weather, of course, and not only U.S. harvest weather looks really good. It's yeah. dry, yeah. but South America, there's been some dryness concerns in Brazil. They have some rain in the forecast, it looks like. I guess – looking ahead here, what are some of the things that you're going to be watching that could really drive this grain market here throughout the month of October?
Yeah, I think the activity of large speculators is still really important. I mean, when you look at the rallies that we just had, I think a lot of it was driven more by money flow than like major shifts in the fundamentals. I mean, the obvious fundamental stories were, you know, dry August here, you know, for beans, you get dry South American forecasts that helps the corn and beans. But I don't know that the balance sheets really changed a lot, either domestic or global. So, you know, seeing funds continue to cover their shorts is going to be important. I mean, if you go back, I mean, large specs have covered 95,000 contracts net since August 20th. Since August 20th, large specs, that's 475 million bushels. For beans, covered 81,000, that's 400 million bushels since August 27th. And for wheat, a little over 20,000 contracts. So you're talking 100 million bushels there since August 27th. So that's significant short covering. We haven't seen a ton of new longs coming in. But I think that's really the main primary factor right now. So
with those funds, have they been covering some shorts in the grains and maybe moving some money? I guess I would say moving some money around and maybe out of, say, crude and equities and things like that with some of the geopolitical volatility we have, of course, the Middle East issues and more. So maybe are funds moving into grains and commodities, or are they moving to the sidelines? I mean, what's your perception when you look at the latest fund data you're talking about, David?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like they're kind of moving to the sidelines. You know, if you've been short this market as a fund, and, you know, granted, we don't know when those shorts entered, but I mean, it could have entered as high as $6 and you're sitting at 390 with harvest coming and, you know, everything going on. At some point, you just got to say, all right, let's take the money and run. And so I think it might not be much more complicated than that. You had some good technical signals, particularly in some wheat contracts, and you're breaking resistance. And yeah, I think funds just moving to the sidelines and taking the money and running.
Anything when you mentioned, you know, the geopolitical concerns and more, I mean, anything with the outside markets, the dollar surging a bit on Friday with the jobs data, crude, of course, has been rallying with the tensions in the Middle East. Are any of those factors going to be a concern for you in the broader grain livestock market picture as we go through the weekend into next week?
Yeah, I mean, that's such a big question. I'm not even sure where to start. I mean, I think the first thing is, you know, energy prices have come down a lot, and it's a good opportunity for farmers to lock some of that in. So if you're looking at something actionable, I mean, you got a war in the Middle East, and, you know, crude oil just, you know, nearly touched 65. Heating oils came down to some major, major lows. So it was a good opportunity for farmers. I mean, again, war in the Middle East and cheap gas don't often go together. So take advantage of that. That's probably the most actionable thing, I think, to bring attention to.
Well, and I think, too, as we kind of wrap up here, got about a minute, Dave, I think to reiterate for farmers, a lot of what I've been hearing from folks is that even though it's a busy time with harvest season, it's a spot to reward this rally and not necessarily bury your head in the sand. I mean, even if you make a sale right now and it's your worst sale at some of these price levels, I mean, at least you're getting started to some degree, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. I mean, decide how many sales you're going to make. If you make 10% sales throughout the year, I mean, you got to make 10 decisions. So if you sell 10% now, are you going to make the next 9 sales over 440, over 450? You know, probably not. So if you look at it that way, it's a little easier. The last thing I want to point out is, I mean, the corn stocks report that came out on Monday was pretty friendly corn. I think the most shocking thing to see was the disappearance from June to September. Everybody's comparing, you know, September over September, saying, you know, we got a lot of grain out here. But the disappearance from June 1 to Sep 1 in total was the largest in history. And the on-farm disappearance was the largest in history as well. On-farm disappearance was about 630 million bushels, all right, 40% more than last year. So a significant amount of farmer selling happened in that July-August timeframe that put the market bottom in. And so I don't think we're necessarily going to see the harvest pressure, because I think a lot of it's already coming through.
All right. We appreciate the insight and the thoughts. Folks can learn more at BrockReport.com. David Brock with the Brock Report. Thanks for being with us on AOA. We'll talk to you again real soon. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse.
All right. Coming up next on AOA, powered by Cenex Premium Diesel and Premium Lubricants. We'll take a look at news headlines and more. We'll be back right after this.
Compeer Financial helped us get into our forever home.
They helped me expand more than acreage.
And helped our dairy grow for the next generation.
At Compeer Financial, we see potential in every plan. Our unique perspective finds solutions to your challenges. And our specially trained financial team guides you every step of the way. Partner with us to make your goals possible. Compeer.com. Compeer Financial ACA is an equal opportunity lender and equal opportunity provider. NMLS number 619731, copyright 2019, all rights reserved.
Efficiency is critical for your farming or dairy operation, so extending the life of your equipment, walls, flooring, and machinery by adding plastic liners installed by Osseo Plastics and Supply only makes sense. Plastic liners wear longer than steel and they clean up fast. The call to Osseo Plastics will save you valuable downtime and lower repair costs for years to come. Make the smart choice and call Osseo Plastics and Supply. Have them help you become more efficient with your money and time with plastic liners and resurfaced equipment and flooring from Osseo Plastics and Supply.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And today's AOA, powered by Cenex. With planting season in full swing, you can count on Cenex stores, high-quality lubricants to keep your operation moving. Partner with your local experts, minimize your downtime, and protect your operation with Cenex Premium Lubricants. Go to your nearest Cenex store or visit Cenex.com for more information. Well, many across the ag supply chain and the overall supply chain breathing a sigh of relief on Friday as members of the International Longshoremen's Association and management groups reached a tentative deal on wages after tens of thousands of union members working from Maine to Texas walked off the job Tuesday morning. Now, according to reports, the two sides agreeing to extend the expired contract until January 15th to allow time for final details to be worked out and ratified by rank-and-file members of the union. Sources say the new agreement on wages amounts to a $4 per hour raise for each year of the six-year contract. In total, with five subsequent pay hikes, wages would be raised by 62% over the duration of the contract. Now, many folks throughout agriculture breathing a sigh of relief, including the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Their president and CEO, Dan Hallstrom, says the agreement comes as good news to the livestock producers and exporters who ship more than $100 million worth of product through these ports each week.
We see this as very good news. Getting people back to work, starting cargo moving again out of the Gulf and East Coast is essential to our business. So from that standpoint, you know, we're very excited about these developments in the last few hours. I think the importance of this is that, you know, we have a reputation globally as being a very reliable supplier to our customers all over the world. So in that regard, getting people back to work at these ports and getting cargo moving again is essential, and being able to continue to supply our customers, especially for some of our smaller exporters, our smaller members, it's a difficult situation for everyone involved, but especially for some of the smaller companies. So I think in this regard, getting business back on track is this is really good news as we go forward.
Now, Mike Seifer, the president and CEO of the National Grain and Feed Association, said in a statement in part, left unresolved, this strike could have led to higher transportation costs for agricultural shippers and jeopardized valuable customer relationships. For the sake of rural America, we hope that the parties involved will work diligently between now and January 15th to find a long-term agreement that works for both sides and keeps our shipping channels open, end quote. So again, dock workers reaching a tentative agreement and back to work as of Friday. Well, World Dairy Expo happening this past week in Madison, Wisconsin. Right now, we want to listen into a conversation here on AOA between a friend of the show, Brian Winnikins at affiliate WRDN in Durand, Wisconsin. He talks with CoBank's lead dairy economist, Corey Geiger, right now here on AOA.
Corey, thank you for joining us. Well, for 2024, it's been kind of a tale of two stories here. The first part of the year, you know what, demand wasn't really there and the milk prices really weren't very high. But as the year has gone on, the demand is starting to increase and we've been seeing lower supply and lower production.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a lot of dynamics moving around the market right now, Brian. The early in the year, cheese prices were pretty ho-hum, I guess would be. And then cheese exports really picked up. We're on a record pace right now, internationally speaking. Should be the first 1 billion pound cheese export year. Should easily finish out the year for that. So demand started picking up internationally. Supplies got tight. And now domestic demand has been pretty strong, too. So as all that's taken place and milk production's not been growing either here in the world's second largest dairy export market, the 27 countries, the EU. So prices have been steadily moving up. And earlier in the year, especially for those parts of the country that make a lot of cheese, we're at World Dairy Expo, we're in Wisconsin, Class 3 prices were inverted, so normally Class 3 cheese and whey are higher than Class 4 butter powder, but that wasn't the case up until September here, and now the markets have gone back to a traditional pattern.
With the supply side, let's talk about the issue of beef on dairy. Is this playing into not only the dairy markets with lower milk production, lower number of cows, but also into the beef markets as well? Mm-hmm.
So the beef on dairy, you know, we start with it, a calf born from a Holstein or Jersey dam from a beef sire. The reason that trend is growing because the carcasses yield more meat. And the other thing is the U.S. cattle herd is at the lowest level since 1951. So the demand is out there for these calves, and that's not going away anytime soon. But then what's happened here, now dairy replacements, the number of animals ready to enter the milking string is at a 20-year low. So there's a lot of different moving parts that we've never really seen in our generation in the dairy industry.
And this is something that really could affect both industries, but especially the dairy industry for the next few years, correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's this biological fact. We make 9 months from conception to birth and then about 2 years to raise them. So, you know, simple math says we're about 3 years out from any major movement on what is an ocean liner of of heifers in this country on the dairy side.
And so with that, are dairy farmers having to kind of make some choices here of what they want to do? Should I do more dairy on beef? Should I do less dairy on beef? Should I maybe just do a lot more replacements to sell on the open market because the dairy industry is going to need those replacements?
I think each dairy farmer can really take a look, and it's a time to be creative with your business. You know, a year ago, mid-summer, you could have bought any replacement you wanted for $1,600 to $1,700, and I started getting calls about Thanksgiving last year, and I can't find replacements for my expansion. I'm like, I can find them for you. It's going to cost you $2,800 to $3,000, which is about the price for good ones now. So that really changes your budgets if you're going to be a growing dairy operation, because you almost essentially doubled that cost. So I think it's going to take more planning on everyone's part at the farm gate. You know, on the flip side, you could make a beef on dairy calf, sell it from 600 to upwards of $1,000 at 7 days old. Well, that's a pretty good coupon, a money coupon to clip when it comes to cash flow, too. So it's not a simple answer.
Talking with Corey Geiger, he's lead dairy economist for CoBank, and had a chance to talk with Corey during our World Dairy Expo here in Madison, Wisconsin. So, Corey, let's talk a little bit about that demand. Obviously, fourth quarter is always a big deal for the dairy industry. We have kids going back to school, so that means increased fluid milk. We have the football season starting. That means increased cheese because everybody wants to have pizza and or something for the tailgate party. Plus, we have increased butter consumption because it's the holidays and let's start baking. Are we going to see that again this year with that demand side?
Mm-hmm. So we've had 3 years in a row of butter prices on the CME spot butter prices over $3 per pound. That they were at that level from May until a couple weeks ago. I think some of the retailers have been buying ahead this year because they didn't want to. The last thing you want is not having product on the shelves if you're a retailer. So the butter has softened up a little bit here, but the demand is still strong. You know, we got to remember consumers are eating their dairy these days. Over 80% of the dairy products sold in this country are manufactured dairy products, with cheese and butter being the leading category. When we look at the market, milk production's been down 14 straight months when you look at the USDA report. But the other thing that's happening these days is 12 of those last 14 months, milk component production has been up. Butter fat pounds, protein pounds. And so for 80% of the dairy processors out there, that's really the number they're looking at.
And also on the demand side, let's look at the export part of it. Because of our lower prices compared to world prices, our dairy products are at a value, even though we've had strength in the dollar. But then we still have, you know, some other issues like with China, where their economy is, and so their demand is a little bit lower. So is it a wash, or are there still opportunities on the export side?
There's certainly. China's been pulled back on buying, and they're the world's largest dairy product importer. So we got to start right with that, Brian. But after that, Mexico has been a strong buyer. They've been 3 months already here recently, had record monthly cheese imports from the United States. 84% of the products that Mexico, dairy products that they import, come from this country. So there's an example of USMCA working very well in the dairy industry. We're getting more free trade agreements coming online in the countries of Central America, and together that's become a good market. Southeast Asia traditionally has been a good market, and the MENA countries, which is Middle East and North Africa. So those are places for growth. Right now during World Dairy Expo, there's a delegation of I think almost 40 people here from Indonesia, and they are the seventh best customer when you look at the countries around the world for the U.S. dairy products. So there's some strong upside opportunities.
That is Corey Geiger, lead economist for the dairy industry for CoBank, as we chatted with him here at World Dairy Expo. I'm Brian Winnekins for AOA.
And thanks again to our great affiliate, Brian Winnekins with WRDN in Durand, Wisconsin, for that update from World Dairy Expo here on AOA, powered by Cenex Premium Diesel. Visit your nearest Cenex location or Cenex.com for more. All right, up next, we're going to have an open mic conversation with Ryan Schaefer, Vice President of New Holland, North America. Back with more on AOA right after this.
Thinking about adding cover crops? Olson Farms of Mondovi is pleased to announce cover crop planting services this fall. Adding cover crops like winter wheat can improve soil health, build organic matter, control soil erosion, boost crop yields, and increase residue to help combat white mold in soybeans. Receive a $5 per acre credit in crop insurance next year. Olson Farms has cleaned and bin run winter wheat available. Call Christina Olson at 715-495-6104 for your cover crop needs while improving your farm's bottom line.
Double-digit losses in the milk markets with this WRDN market update. I'm Brian Winnekins. At the Mercantile Exchange, November milk down 39 to 21.44, December down 27 to 20.90, January down 22 to 20.24, February down 11 at 19.82.
Meanwhile, in the cattle markets, live and feeder cattle markets mostly higher on the day. After southern cattle were going for a dollar higher in the cash markets, higher box beef prices also helped to support both live and feeder cattle markets. Hogs mostly lower as cash markets never really developed during the week. And also the pork cutout values were lower once again. October live cattle up a dollar to 187. October feeder cattle up 65 cents to 249.62. October hogs down 15 cents to 84.02. Chicago Board of Trade, corn, soybeans, and wheat all were mostly lower on the day. Harvest pressure and a risk-off type of trade helped to pressure corn and beans throughout the day. Also, South America will continue to look for rains over the next 7 days to get soybean planting to expand into mid-month. Wheat futures mostly lower as well due to strength in the dollar and world values moving lower on the world wheat markets. December corn down 3.5 to 424 and 3/4. November beans down 8.25 to 1037 and 3/4. December wheat down 13 and 3/4.
When it comes to planting, we know that it takes more than just seed and soil. It's Matthew here with Bluff Country Feed and Seed, and I know that it takes quality seed, fertilizer, as well as expertise. That is how you build a proper foundation and lay down your roots. This is exactly why we can be your experts, because we are rooted here locally. We know Bluff Country because we live here with you. Strong roots lead to a strong business and a thriving community. So plant your roots with us at Bluff Country Feed and Seed.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, powered by Cenex. Select the right grease. It's critical for your operation. Cenex Premium Greases will help your equipment achieve superior strength and performance. Visit Cenex.com or your nearest Cenex location for more information. Well, joining us now as we continue our series of open mic style conversations surrounding the ag economy and how the ag equipment industry is facing some of the headwinds and challenges out there and working with our farmers and ranchers. Very pleased to have joining us Vice President for New Holland Agriculture North America, Ryan Schaefer, here on AOA. Ryan, it is good to talk with you. Thanks so much for the time and taking part in this series with us. We appreciate it.
Of course, really appreciate the opportunity to join you here on AOA, Jesse, and looking forward to the conversation here this afternoon. Always a pleasure for me, you know, to not only talk about our business at New Holland. Certainly, I'm pretty proud, pretty passionate about what we do as a business, but you know, with the role I play in leading our brand in North America, I'm frankly just as active across various areas of the ag industry, you know, as a promoter of North American ag and the U.S. farmer myself. So always very welcoming to take the opportunity to engage, you know, throughout the ag community here.
Well, and I thank you for the time. And, you know, as we kind of dive right in, it's really no secret that the ag economy is in a downturn. We've seen it affect multiple sectors. We have a lot of folks, of course, they're looking at depressed commodity prices, yet the cost of inputs, the cost of various equipment, et cetera, is still, you know, high. That hasn't necessarily adjusted to the commodity price environment. And we track different things like Purdue University's Ag Economy Barometer, for instance, farmer sentiment there weakening, things like that. So I guess just to kind of set this up, what is your overall perception of the state of the ag economy right now? What are you hearing from New Holland customers, Ryan?
Yeah, I think the short answer, and you hit on it, it's no secret to anyone, things are tough right now. It's difficult. And, you know, no matter how experienced I get in this industry, no matter, you know, how many harvests I have under my belt as a farmer on our family farm in Illinois, myself and my brother, the fact that we live and commit ourselves to a cyclical industry that's highly correlated to the trade prices of grain commodities, you know, doesn't make the downturns any easier. Certainly when we have a contraction in demand in our industry, when our farmers and end users, you know, face a contraction in crop prices, It's difficult nonetheless. And I look back, you know, this is, I've been in the equipment industry about 20 years. This is essentially the third major downturn I've worked through since becoming a manager, you know, in the farm equipment manufacturing industry. And these times force us to make tough decisions. They force our customers to make tough decisions. Undoubtedly, we come out of the backside of each downturn as better business people, as certainly more educated managers. But it's tough nonetheless. And I think we're looking at 2025 being, although we've seen some life in the markets the last couple of weeks here, you know, with the 40, 50, 60 cents in the bean market maybe, and a nickel here, a dime and a half there in the corn market, I think we've still got another challenging year ahead of us, despite, you know, improvements that we've seen, you know, in some of our cost of capital lately, despite whatever may happen in this upcoming election. And so farmers are really taking a sharp pencil approach to planning for 2025. And that certainly doesn't make the business of selling tractors and balers and combines any easier.
No, I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't think so. Well, and of course, I think a lot of the concern really kicked off earlier in the year as we started hearing about numerous layoffs from some of your competitors and hearing about the ripple effects of that and the interest rate environment's effects and the downturn in commodities there at that point. And this all kind of been starting to kind of capitulate upon itself here. So from New Holland's perspective here, thinking about going into the end of the year, looking into next year, what are your thoughts on, you know, are we going to see a slowing of sales? Is it something that could affect the overall business model? Things like that. I mean, give us your thoughts from New Holland's perspective there, Ryan.
Yeah, I think on the question first, Jesse, of are we going to see a slowing of sales? It's something that we've undoubtedly already seen and frankly started to forecast really at the end of 2023 even, where as a manufacturer, we started to make some tough calls on our production schedule. We started to slow line rates. It's been no trade secret that John Deere and AGCO are taking very similar approaches. You know, we've seen a pullback in labor investment across the industry, which is pretty typical, I would say, of the first year of a demand decline, a little bit of a down cycle market. As we look into the end of 2024, sure, we just kind of wrapped up the third quarter here yesterday, and things, while not great, I would say we're stable. We're in line with expectations. I think you'll probably hear the same across the industry. And as we look towards the end of the year, I'm cautiously optimistic, or frankly, as optimistic as any leader can be in, you know, a down cycle trend, that there is still some profitability, you know, in the crop this year. Certainly, I think we're seeing yield reports all across the Midwest down into the Mississippi Delta that have largely been pretty positive. Now you've got some hot spots, Northwest Iowa, parts of Minnesota that had a pretty wet start to the growing season that are in a little bit tougher shape. But largely, there seems to be a pretty good crop out there. On the livestock side of the business, on the protein production side of the business, which, of course, you know, for the concentration of my P&L that exists in hay and forage equipment, is very, very important to the New Holland business in North America. Profitability is still, well, not record-setting, pretty stable. You know, cow-calf producers and some of the beef industry has some pretty good prices in front of them right now. The Class 3 milk prices are relatively stable for most of our dairy producers. So I think you've got kind of a mixed bag of sorts where a lot of farmers are potentially going to be in a position to still have to make some buying decisions where they allocate some of their available capital between now and the end of the year versus paying a higher tax bill. But everyone is very much in a wait and see mode. And I can say that, you know, the results of our retail pace at the dealer level have been emblematic of that through the first half of harvest here. So I think we've still got some opportunities through the end of the year, but they're not going to come without a lot of hard work.
No, it seems like, to your point earlier, we're going to have to really sharpen up the pencils here quite a bit. Leasing has been a very hot topic I've heard a lot more about here in recent months with the current environment. Some folks may be saying, okay, I don't necessarily want to outright buy something new or take on a new loan for something, but maybe I could lease something if I need it for my operation. Are you hearing more of that from your customers?
I would say that I have, over the last month, started to hear an uptick in appetite, particularly at the dealer level, just asking for, how do we refine the tools that are in our toolkit? I think when you look across our range of products, we've got a number of different financial instruments that we subsidize pretty heavily through our profit margins to help a customer's ability to own, a New Holland product in the right way, whether that be, a longer-term interest-free period on some of our hay equipment that we're offering up to 60 months in some cases right now. Depending on the mid-range tractor line, you've got 48, 60, 72-month interest-free notes available. Cash crop products, we have a tendency to take a little bit more of a waiver of interest approach through season of use to support a regular trade cycle. But I've definitely had dealers, I would say for the first time, really probably in the last half decade, start to draw some attention more towards leasing. Insofar that we, with our partners at CNH Capital, of course, having our captive lender in capital, have revamped our lease structure to our dealers to allow dealers to take more of the, I don't want to say front-end risk, but take more of the responsibility for confirming the remarketing value or the residual value of that lease unit and offer some more competitive lease structures, whether it be an operating lease or a finance lease to a customer where that may make more sense to their banker or lender.
Ryan, I wonder about this as well, and I want to talk about some innovation here from New Holland in a second, but does the current ag economy environment maybe slow down some new product rollout or things like that from your perspective?
Well, I can tell you it's not easy on my balance sheet as a brand leader, but CNH Industrial is not scaling back on our investment in new product development at all. Actually, is the plan for next year. We scaled back very little this year. We're continuing to invest at pretty unprecedented levels for our organization in new product development, technology advancements, because we're learning that, in these challenging economic times, the difference is made where a farmer can see opportunities in the margins for profitability improvement. And a lot of those improvements come from, advanced precision farming technologies, but also advanced machine technologies like our harvesting automation system, the IntelliSense and NutriSense systems that we have on our harvesting equipment, the IntelliBale baler automation system that we launched first on our large square baler offering this year and are coming with on our commercial 6-foot round baler product line. And that to me is where we're really focused on supporting the end user, the farmer, in ensuring that we're coming with technologies that support their quest for maximum economic yield in the investments, the inputs that they're putting into their operation. So we're going to continue to invest to look for those opportunities as a manufacturer, as a product development organization too.
Well, once again, we're talking with Ryan Schaefer, Vice President for New Holland North America, here today on AOA, powered by Cenex. Mitigate risk on the farm with premium diesel from Cenex. Go to Cenex.com or your nearest location for more information. We'll be back with more here on AOA right after this.
When Senator Tammy Baldwin first went to Washington, the big news story was Y2K. And we were partying like it was 1999. Baldwin has been in D.C. for more than 25 years. And after a quarter century, her values are a lot more Washington than Wisconsin. Baldwin supported providing puberty blockers and sex change surgeries to minor children in Wisconsin. And Baldwin supports forcing women's domestic violence shelters in Wisconsin to admit biological men who claim to identify as women, even though domestic violence survivors say it would be traumatic to be forced to sleep in the same shelters as men. Tammy Baldwin, 25 years in Washington has changed her, and now she's just too extreme for Wisconsin. Senate Leadership Fund paid for and is responsible for the content of this advertising, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. www.senateleadershipfund.org.
Real Country 1430 AM and 107.3 FM WRDN. I'm Brian Winnikins from World Dairy Expo, and thank you to our expo sponsors, including Elsevia Co-op, AMPI, Anibis Silo, BioVet, Bauer Seeds and Service, Animal Wellness Center, Buffalo Valley, Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, Compeer Financial, Osteoplastics, UtterTech, Synergy Co-op, Olson Farm Services, Farm First Dairy Cooperative, Wisconsin Corn Growers Association, and Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board. I'm with Leonard Polzin. He's a dairy economist, of course, with UW Extension, and we're going to just talk a little bit about the proposal for the federal milk market order system and what, if it all went through, what it would mean. He's had a chance to kind of review it and all of that. And I guess, Leonard, thanks for joining us first, but okay, what does all this mean, all this stuff? What do you see in this proposal?
So I think that's a great question. And obviously, you know, we're in a dynamic market, right? And I think one thing that's really important to realize is that, you know, at the end of the day, supply and demand factors are certainly the main things that do determine price and price discovery, right? So when we're talking about federal orders, we're talking about a mechanism in which helps us to calculate a certain portion of that price, right? So I think that's important to remember that we're talking about, you know, some of the mathematics, some of the calculations that come through to a portion of that milk check, right? So in the recent changes that are proposed, the USDA is coming out with here, we'll just kind of go through a couple of the highlights of them quick, if that's fine with you. The first one is milk composition factor. So we're updating from 3.3% protein, 6% other solids, and 9.3% non-fat solids. So on when it comes to, like, if we're keeping score on the balance sheet here, on the farmer side, we'd put that one in the plus column as more of the components that they're being shipped are being accounted for in those price calculations. So another thing that's happening is we're dropping 500-pound barrels from the surveyed products list. So depending on where black barrel spreads are and all of this, you know, some of that will determine whether this falls on the positive or more pulling down price side. But I think there's an argument to be made that could more accurately represent some of the market conditions and pricing that is happening there. When we take a look at make allowance is obviously a big one that has a lot of people's attention and is difficult to fully conceive the impacts of at the moment, simply because, you know, we are in that dynamic pricing system. But make allowances are some of the bigger issues that may pull down producers' milk checks going forwards. But I will say that when USDA was doing this, I think there's ample evidence or a good story to be told that they were trying to be as neutral as they could be in farmer milk price, right? So, for example, like we said before, increasing some of those milk composition factors. They're also increasing some recovery factors in the processing calculations. So these will add some value back into that milk check as well. One other portion that is the recommendation is some of our class one differentials, which is, the amount of financial incentive that's needed to move milk from surplus areas to deficit areas. And in certain parts of the countries, especially where class one or fluid utilization is going to be more, or naturally is more, we'll see some of the impacts, positive influence of that. I think that since we are based on an end product pricing system, that means that the way that our products are being used and what our milk is going into, we have some regional differences in that, right? Just naturally, right? The Midwest is a heavier cheese market. The Northeast is a better fluid market, right? So I think that we're going to see different impacts in different parts of the country simply because of how, our products are being utilized. So I think in aggregate, USDA certainly made an attempt to be as neutral as they could be with some of the effects of this. And I think they're, aware of and sensitive to that. But simply because of the way that our system and structure works, there will be regional differences, that's for sure.
Leonard, I know one of the things that dairy farmers have always grumbled about potentially with the system is this concept of depooling. You know, you jump in, you jump out. You jump in, you jump out. In your research on this proposal, did USDA ever address that?
So a lot of the pooling regulations are handled by the individual orders. So they have the autonomy to be able to set those very specific pooling, depooling, and also repooling, rules and regulations for the order itself. So some of those discussions have come up and are in during this federal order hearing process. But the way that the rules are written and the way that those specific portions of this greater legislation are handled are held on that individual order by order basis. Yep.
Is there a reason for that? Because it just seems like that could be something that kind of screws up the whole mechanism here.
Yeah, it's my understanding that originally the idea behind that was to allow for more regional control, simply because we said before, Midwest is, we're cheese heavy, right? Some other places are more fluid heavy, all of this. And what it did, the idea was, is that the by having those pooling rules and regulations in the individual orders, it would allow for those orders to make the adjustments to more accurately reflect the area in which they're operating and in those market conditions.
Well, it's one of those things that will be all up to the dairy farmers now to vote on it here later on this fall. Thank you, Leonard, for giving us at least a little insight on some of this, the issue with the federal milk market order. We are, they will be working on this here in fall, right?
Correct. Yep. So November 12th, the USDA is expected to put out their final notice of what their recommendation is. And then after that, producers will have the opportunity to vote on it. So one very important thing I think for producers to keep in mind is that when you're voting for this, you're not voting to have the changes or not, right? What you're voting for is to accept the changes as they are, or what a no vote means is that you are not going to have an order at all, right? So you're not voting for have these changes or maintain the status quo. That's not the option. It's have these changes in the order or don't have orders, right? So if you don't have orders, now we lose a lot of the functions that of the federal orders and the benefits of that, even outside of these pricing systems and mechanisms, right? So for example, payment terms are mandated by federal orders. If we don't have those, then we could go theoretically to 60, 90 days of payment terms. Also a lot of lab verification and testing, audits of handlers and processors, right? Also export verifications. So if federal orders are voted out, then all of these additional functions, data gathering even, right, would no longer be governed by an organization that has, you know, both the carrot and the stick, if you will, for compliance. So if a no vote does happen, I think it's important to consider, some of the unintended consequences or ramifications of saying that, we vote no to this, but, realizing that saying no to these amendments, these changes, means that you're saying no to the whole thing.
Something to remember, dairy farmers. That's Leonard Polzing with the University of Wisconsin. He's the dairy market economist from World Dairy Expo. I'm Brian Winnikins.
Just like you, Cenex Premium Diesel is no stranger to the field. In fact, Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster comes with a more complete additive package for a more complete burn. In simpler terms, you get restored power by up to 4.5% and restored fuel economy by up to 5%. Of course, there's always typical number 2 diesel, if you're not into the whole added power thing. Cenex Premium Diesel. Diesel that doesn't mess around.
Your Cenex Ruby Fieldmaster distributor is Elsevia Co-op.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, powered by Cenex. Every minute matters on the farm and ranch. Bulk diesel fuel storage can boost productivity and maximize your ROI. Protect your equipment and prepare for the unexpected with Cenex Premium Diesel. Visit your nearest location, talk with your local experts, or go to cenex.com for more information. Well, we continue here on AOA, our conversation with Ryan Schaefer, Vice President for New Holland North America. And Ryan, talking a little bit more about innovation, and I want to lean in on that point here a little bit before we wrap up our conversation today. It's obviously an ever-evolving conversation. Needs are changing for farmers and ranchers when it comes to equipment and the explosion of precision technology and all the different uses that are available. I mean, looking out 5-10 years, your thoughts on the evolution here, I guess, of technology in agriculture and sustainability conversations, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot out there right now. What is on your mind here, kind of crystal ball looking forward?
I'm going to say, you know, there's plenty of stories or parables, if you will, about how we are facing a faster rate of change in terms of technology adoption than has ever existed in the entire history of humankind before, as we look to the future. I don't see that slowing down. I do see it becoming quite a bit smarter. Technology for technology's sake is great. It's interesting. It makes compelling media. It makes fun things for us to show at farm shows. But where we're putting our money as New Holland and our technology partners in the CNH House of Brands is really in focused on smart automation and leveraging precision farm technologies together with advanced machine control technologies to deliver things like grain cart automation that help with the cost of labor, or IntelliSense bale automation on our bale product line that helps build a square shoulder, more dense bale, delivers a little bit more intelligence about the protein content and the overall feed value of that bale. Very similar technologies that we've launched in the last year on our FR series forage harvester line that use vision technology to help understand, along with near-infrared capability, the feed value of the silage that's coming through the machine and going into the pit. That's really where we're focused and where I see the continued advancement accelerating is in machine control technologies that really deliver improvements not just to cost of operation and efficiencies, but actually can contribute to the yield that we're pushing through a machine, can actually deliver smarter values as opposed to just a reduction in operating cost.
Well, I appreciate the thoughts there, thinking forward, Ryan. As we kind of wrap up our conversation today, I'll leave this a little open-ended for you for final thoughts or anything you'd want to reiterate to folks listening in. Again, a lot going on, a lot of challenges, the ag economy, supply chain issues out there, the geopolitical problems, election in front of us. There's so many different things out there. So I guess, what would you add? What would you reiterate to folks, et cetera, here, just to kind of close out our conversation today?
I think the big thing, I had a mentor ask me, a couple weeks ago, kind of aligned with Farm Progress Show timeframe, you know, what are some of the things that you've learned over your 20 years in the business that you think you would tell a farmer when considering machine purchases or considering investment in the business? And, you know, I think back and 20 years ago when my brother and I were coming out of college, my brother's since taken over our family farm and I still stay pretty connected there. But, you know, if I can talk to Nick at 25 years old and tell him what the future would bring, the best advice I can give is really work hard to understand the data that your farm is generating, understand the numbers of the farm, and really quickly get savvy about how to identify and chase out waste in your operation, and then how to pursue improvement, across the board in your value-added data, in your yield decision points, if you will. And that will help weather the storm. And I think it's never been more critical than right now. Sure, we saw, 50 basis points improvement in the Fed rate here 2 weeks ago. Great news. certainly. I don't think it necessarily dramatically changes our demand outlook for the end of the year, but certainly helps our dealers and their cost of inventory carry almost immediately. But when I look at what we've experienced in terms of interest rates over the last 4 years, you know, Jesse, farmers of your generation and mine together, these operators have never worked in a capital cost structure like we're facing today. And it's pushing us to get really, really good about data-oriented decision-making and working to take emotion out of the business. And I think about that often. If I could rewind the clock 20 years and sit my brother and sit myself and even my father down and say, this is what we got to do differently immediately to be in a better future 20 years from now, that's where I'd take the focus.
It's a great spot for us to wrap up the conversation, and awesome insight. Really appreciate the time here today. Vice President for New Holland Agriculture North America, Ryan Schaefer. Ryan, thanks for being with us on Agriculture of America, and we'll look forward to talking again in the future.
Absolute pleasure, Jesse. Looking forward to doing it again sometime.
Absolutely. Once again, Ryan Schaefer, Vice President for New Holland North America, joining us here today on AOA as we continue to discuss the ag economy, ag equipment sector, and more. And it's a conversation we'll continue to have here in the weeks and months ahead on AOA. Well, we're up against the clock. Time flies when you're having fun, I suppose. We're out of time. Today's show brought to you by CEDEX. As a farmer, unpredictability is inevitable. Protect equipment with CEDEX Premium Diesel to keep you in the field. Trust your local experts at CEDEX or go to CEDEX.com for more. Should mention this real quick as well. Stay safe and healthy during this harvest season. A lot of dry conditions out there across the countryside. I know I've been hearing about wildfires and field fires. I've seen some posts from my hometown area in north central Iowa. Rural fire department's been out the last